Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
This is the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. I'm Ann Clark, a member of the Commonwealth Club and chair of the Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum. Our program tonight is Solar Energy Project, Kenyan Youth Innovation Centers, with Barry Levine, Ph.D., Professor of Computer Sciences, San Francisco State University, Jambi Kahahu, St. Stephen's Memorial Academy in Limuru, Kenya. We're welcoming them now tonight, and we'll give them a big hand for being with us tonight, and we will start with you, Barry. Okay.
Thank you, Anne, for that very nice introduction. I would like to give a little bit of background before we dive into the project, just to indicate how this came to be. So basically, I've been going to East Africa for many years, and I'm very attracted to Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Tanzania, and I go there every year on other projects as well as this project. So I've had a lot of experience, and one of the things that happened in my experience is I was working on a USAID project outside of Nairobi in Kenya, and computers came in from the United States. I needed them moved, so I got a couple of guys who were just slashing grass. They didn't have much education, but it's cheaper to hire somebody to cut grass than to buy a lawnmower or something. And I got them to move the computers, and then I set up a computer lab at the university, and then they bugged me to get them shifted to the computer lab to move computers in the computer lab, which is, of course, much nicer than cutting grass. And so I was able to do that, and at the end of the year, I started bugging them. I said, you guys have to learn something about computers. And so I returned 3 years later, and they were teaching computer literacy. It completely changed their lives. And they're still over there doing this. And this was back in 1988 that they started. So that's fantastic. I should tell you something about how Jambi and I met up. I was giving a presentation, not on this project, this is before the project started, for Sierra Club, and about my travels to Kenya and Rwanda. And so we met, we started talking, and I mentioned the ideas. I had a dream, an actual dream at night, and I woke up in the morning and I wrote it down, and this is what resulted, this mission. The project's intent is to leverage the intellectual and creative capacity of under-resourced rural communities in developing countries. There's a lot of talent in any community, except when they don't have resources, they can't realize that the experiences that will move them forward. So the objectives was to develop innovation, micro-entrepreneurship centers in rural communities for youngsters to create projects that would assist the community members as well as others. So this would require the community to be involved. If the community's not involved, it won't happen. There's many projects that are focused on Africa and as well as other places in the world, but we cannot bring in ideas, and even no matter how good in our heads they are, it has to fit the local culture, and it has to be sustainable, and the people have to be able to integrate that into their own culture and own environment. And in any case, the kids that we're focusing on youth, and these, like it says, focusing on youth because there are many projects that provide World Bank funding or USAID funding for adults, like microenterprise development, where they need a small amount of funds to maybe start a business selling some locally grown fruit or vegetables or something. But there's really not much of any focus on the youth. And if the youth cannot continue school, then they cannot create opportunities for themselves for their future. And an example in Kenya, the youth needs to have school uniforms to continue school. They don't have the school uniforms, they can't continue school. And there are people, the poverty that I've seen there is quite astounding. And the families either cannot afford the school uniforms, or they need to keep the kids home to help out in their small plots growing vegetables or fruit. And so, but they see things. They notice their environment, just the same as kids anywhere. And they may see that they see their parents struggling in some sense, and they might find a way to facilitate their lives and improving their lives. So networks of participating communities will be linked to share innovations. That's the main idea. The guiding principles are youth must be given opportunities to succeed at innovation with accompanying recognition. Participating villages must take ownership to facilitate the first principle. Villages should provide a local site for meetings, project demonstrations, etc. Okay, so it's they have to take ownership. If they don't take ownership, then I'm the owner, and that doesn't work. It's not sustainable. The community participants we're focusing on are the youth within the age range of 10 to 22 years old. And you'll see pictures and videos of my visits to the site in Kenya, and you'll see that they're much younger than 22. The community members, mentors, and facilitators to ensure the community takes ownership of the project, which is what I've been saying. So before we move on to some examples of some projects that were very successful, let's look at the location that we're talking about, in case you're not familiar with the location of Kenya. So this is on the website that we developed for the project. Unfortunately, hackers got in, and so I took the site down. Yeah, it's to be expected. So unfortunately, it's not on the web. But this is, of course, I saved all of the website technical details. So you can see here. Well, actually, you can see Kenya is at the east Africa, just off of the Indian Ocean. Here's a note of Limuru Town. Limuru is where the project is located, and Jambi will tell you more because that's where she's from. And so you could see. It's bordered by Tanzania to the south, Victoria, and you'll see that Ethiopia, Somalia, Sudan are very close by. So this is Limuru, in right near Nairobi. It's about a 30-minute drive from Nairobi. And I'm also doing projects in a place called Migori, which is at the southwestern corner of Kenya, which, by the way, is that's the area that Obama's family's from. So. Okay, and so you could see here we have the, I described the mission, how it all got started, how the project got started, et cetera, et cetera. So let's look at some examples of innovation by the youth. A very well-known one is Richard Terere. He's a Maasai from Kenya, and he's 13. Now, we're taking you back a few years, and this is when he did it, when he was 13. And actually, this is from a blog in 2013, and it took place in 2011. So he was an 11-year-old Maasai boy in 2011, and this is an example of how people can innovate just by looking at their surroundings. They may not have computers at their disposal or that the education that we have that we're familiar with, but they can look at their surroundings and they can find ways to improve their lot. So Maasai boys between 6 and 9 years old are responsible for the cows, for herding cows. And you might think it's a little young, but when you go there and see that and real, then it looks perfectly natural. And before six, how old? They're herding goats. How old would you say? 3 years old?
Yeah, from three.
Yeah, from 3 years old, the kids are herding goats. They have that responsibility. The Moran warriors kill the lions to save the livestock from lions. Of course, they also kill the lions as part of their ceremony. Moving from a boy to a man. This is a problem causing the lion population to decrease. And so there's a lot of challenges because the animals may destroy crops. So the farmers are naturally want to kill the animals. And so we need alternatives that are viable so that doesn't happen. He tried using a scarecrow, which was very nice. He put the scarecrow out there, and the lions were curious, but they didn't come by. And it worked for one night, but then the lions realized that this is not real, so then they started coming by again. And so he observed that lions never came around the cow shed where the cows were kept at night when he patrolled around with the flashlight. So that brought ideas. So first he took apart his mother's radio and learned electronics. Okay. So I think I saw my nephew doing that here as well. Kids explore like that. Then he got an old car battery powered by a solar panel, motorcycle parts used for blinking turn signals, because you don't want the light to stay on. If it stays on, then the lions become aware. If it's blinking, it's better simulation for somebody walking. And then got a switch to turn the lights on and off from a flashlight and created a diagram with these parts. He actually did this. By the way, subsequently, he was giving TED Talks. They flew him to the United States. Okay. I was going to provide that video of the TED Talk, but unfortunately, obviously, the folks listening to podcasts would not be able to see that, so I didn't put that in. When it's assembled, the different lights flash on and off in varied fashions to simulate him walking around the cowshed. He set it up in 2011. Afterwards, there were no problems with lions, so it's just incredible. And you'll see where it was adopted subsequently. He set it up for neighbors in his community. Then it was used around Kenya for lions, hyenas, leopards, and elephants. Okay, you want to keep the animals away rather than killing them. This prevented human-predator conflict, saving lives of animals. He got a scholarship to attend one of the best schools in Kenya. It's called Brookhouse International School. And I could tell you, when I was living in Nairobi for a year, I had a project at an international school of Kenya. It was like a high school. And that school was amazing. The resources they had there were much better than my university here. And he'll start his own business to sell lion lights around Africa, etc. So this is fantastic. It's currently used across Africa, Argentina, India. It's where it's tested on tigers and pumas. He gave his TED Talk in 2013 in California. By July 2017, had over 6 million views, that TED Talk. So Kenya's youngest patented inventor. So there's a URL if you'd like to learn more about that. If you just type Richard Tureri, then you'll quite inspiring. And so that's a little picture from his TED Talk. So I'm not going to play the video. But you can imagine, you know, coming from Kenya, first time he's out of the country, first time he's on a plane, comes to the United States, and he's giving a talk before thousands of people. And to give you an example of what people face, I'm currently doing a project with somebody from Comoros, which is near Madagascar. And my colleague's mother left Comoros for the first time to visit last fall. And when the very first time she took an elevator, she got on the elevator, she saw the doors close, it went to another floor, the doors open, and magic. There was something, a completely different scene. She had no idea how that happened. So they just don't have that in their context. So other examples are in Malawi, there's developing a merry-go-round for children to play, which also serves as a pump for pumping water from a well. So, you know, kids are, they see their parents going off and fetching water, going for miles, and it's a struggle to do that. And so they want to do something to help. So this is one idea. Another idea is the kids have developed a windmill to pump water as well. Construction of water storage facilities from rainwater. During the rainy season, a lot of water is wasted. So that's quite important. Making cooking stoves that are more efficient than burning wood on open fire. That's a big issue. There was a Nobel Prize winner from Kenya. What was her name?
Wangari Maathai.
And so she was. Her focus was on the environment. And rather than cutting trees down to make charcoal to cook, we have other options here. Making biogas from animal manure. And biogas is a fuel for stoves as well. Examples of innovation using appropriate technology. Making some more examples. Making of windmill and turbines for electricity production. So I saw an example where a kid, I can't remember where they're from in East Africa, but they built a windmill. It was quite ingenious what they did. Building bricks from local dirt and mud. This will eradicate shanties and mud houses and slums. Making of herbal medicine and food supplements from locally available trees and vegetables. Making of food storage containers that will preserve food in case of drought and low harvest. Making learning aid equipment to cater for disabled school children. So now we could switch for Jambi to say something about the school. The next several slides will talk about the school. So before we get to Jambi, one sec, the transition from the project that I mentioned about leveraging the in low-resource communities, leveraging the intellectual and creative capacity of the youth. This is transitioned to the solar project.
This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment. This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is Solar Energy Project Kenya Youth Innovation Centers with Barry Levine, PhD, Professor of Computer Services, San Francisco State University, and Jambi Kahuhua, St. Stephen's Memorial Academy, Lemuru, Kenya. And we turn to you now, Jambi, for your wonderful observation and information.
Thank you. This is St. Stephen Rimuru. This school was founded in 1978 by my mother. I had a brother who died, and she felt it was important to have a school where kids around the community can come to school. And it's a school that would take students who didn't have money for tuition and has helped a lot of students and have moved on to become good workforce in Kenya. It was started in 1978, and Limuru Town, that's where I grew up. It was a small town when I was growing up, but now it's becoming a big city. The first 20 people, as I was talking about how the school was founded, the first 20 people were from poor families that Kamiredo village, which is very close to Rimuru. That's where most of the first students who came to St. Stephen came from. The school, when the students came to school, they realized that teachers realized how hungry they were. And so the academic performance wasn't that good. A lot of students came from a village where they don't even have electricity. And sometimes they use the kerosene lamp. And some students also use candles to study at night. And Kenya's education system requires students to buy books. And the St. Stephen tried to provide textbooks for the children. These are now some of the students at St. Stephen. And I believe this picture was taken when Barry was visiting St. Stephen. Mm. And these are some of the girls. Girls' education in Kenya is important because they don't have the same advantage as the boys in going to school. Boys sometimes in families are the ones who are provided education opportunity, but now that's changing because the parents are realizing the importance of having girls go to school. And you can see their happy faces there. Definitely. And now Barry will take over.
There's a video I'd like to present here.
I'm Jambi Kahahu from Limuru, Kenya, where I was born and raised. The project targets the youth, meaning it will help bring positive change within the community. Innovation promotes creativity. It moves the community forward by providing solutions to local problems and will provide a continuous flow of information. A young man told me once, it's only us who can help ourselves to solve some of these problems. And problems that have to deal with very basic infrastructure. And this young man was able to capture what was going on.
This is a classroom, St. Stephen, Limuru. So there's a lot of lightings that teachers do on the blackboard. And I believe as we look closely, this one is talking about the early impact of early visitors in East Africa. I think the teacher who was teaching that class was very kind because he was saying early visitors. But they weren't really visitors. They were the colonialists. But kids are told about their history. And then it also talks about the disadvantage. And before I go any further, I'll stop right there. And I'm going to, because it's very important to talk about the education system in Kenya.
And let me just interject.
Yeah.
When I go, every year I go to Nairobi, to Kenya, for projects, and I go visit the Limuru, the school there, St. Stephen's. And I attended a class where the kids were being taught solar energy, and I noticed on this was the lesson on the boards. I thought it'd be very interesting to take pictures, and it's very interesting what they're saying, how they're treating it.
So so I want to start off talking about the education system in Kenya, but before I do that, I want to go back in time to the early traditional education. The traditional education in Kenya was centered on social and cultural and religious way of life. Knowledge was passed to us orally through our elders. I remember as a young girl having my grandmother tell stories about our traditions, our values, and also she talked about how the missionaries came to our land. And the Christian missionaries introduced Christian religion in the middle of the 19th century, and in the process started the Western education. But their aim was to convert Africans into Christianity, but they wanted to teach them how to read the Bible. So in the process, the Western education opened up. My dad actually is a product of mission school. And I remember briefly him telling us how he used to herd cows when he was a little boy. And the white man, he would say, would come and entice them to go to school. And their parents didn't like that. They would spank them because they left their goats herding out in the field. But beginning of the 20th century, colonial administrations came and took over educational system. They wanted to train Africans in basic practical skills because they wanted them to work for them, to work for the colonial government and also to work for the settlers. And so the whole idea was to develop the colonial economy. And so these practical skills that they gave the Africans was in agriculture, masonry, and also training them as clerks to work under the colonial masters in the offices. But I'll stop right there and talk about the negative pros and cons of colonialism. And then I'll start with the negative. And the negative was Africans lost their independence and were subjected to colonial rule. They were put in villages like reservation camps and where they were forced to pay tax. It was called a hut tax, HUT tax. And so they were forced to go to work for the settlers and also the colonial government. And also land was divided up. Some land was taken away. I remember my ethnic group, the Kikuyus, were really affected because they were farmers, and so they had the most fertile land, and that was taken away from them. And eventually, this created separation of tribes. And in essence, what happened is, even up to this day, the tribal clashes that we have in Africa started back then. It was a product of that. And also the exploitation of natural resources, like sisal for making the basket, ivory. So it also affected the Africans. The positive about colonialism was the Western education.
I'm sorry. Let me interject my personal experience that I had, which is in relation to what Chambi is saying. My first year in Kenya, I was at north of Nairobi, a couple hours, about 3 hour drive, and near Nakuru, if anyone has been to that area, outside of Nakuru, actually. And there was somebody, I was working on a USAID project that was worth several million dollars, and a professor at the University of Illinois had that project, was the leader for the project, and I actually ended up being the person on the ground. And so one part of the project was to train the local staff at the university in computer literacy. So I wasn't going to do that, but I knew folks in Nairobi, Kenyans in Nairobi, that could do an excellent job in training. And one day I'm talking with the planning officer for the university, and he said something to me that I almost fell over, which was he didn't believe that Kenyans could do an adequate job training. So they had to bring in Americans from Illinois to do this kind of thing. And I couldn't believe that, but where he got that from, I'm not sure.
Moving on to the positiveness of Western education is it opened the Africans' eyes to the world because it brought Western education. And it taught them different ways of farming, like growing, farming and agriculture. And so that, in essence, for especially my group, the Kikuyus, that helped them to grow different kind of fruits. And transportation was also developed, and that led to the train system. And also communication like the telephone, and also the missionaries brought the hospitals. Moving back to the importance of education, the Africans resented and questioned the colonialism educational system because it excluded them from higher education. And the colonialists only wanted Kenyans to be trained enough just for the workforce. And they felt they were smart enough. They didn't have to do that. They can also, besides that, they could also have a higher education. So they emphasized, we want a higher education also. Therefore, because of that, independent schools were started, and they spread very quickly. And the future leaders of Kenya are a product of independent schools. And so colonial administration was forced to change educational policies. And because of the demand of the independent schools, they were growing very quickly. The growth was growing at a very high rate. But still, the Europeans, the colonialist policies favored the European schools and also the Asians. They still got that. But moving on to now, Kenyans still have this thirst of knowledge, and it still continues. And that's why in Kenya, even if you go to the ruralist area, you always find a school. And so we are here today showing about the students of St. Stephen, how they are utilizing the energy to make lights. And we can continue.
Not quite done.
Oh, sorry.
So I'd like to transition to some more videos, because I think they really bring the points home. And by the way, the videos, except for the Richard Torrey, these were taken either by Jambi or myself when I visited there. So we have the copyright, so we don't have to worry about that. Let's take a look at some of the kids assembling. I think it's quite remarkable, because when I saw the kids being taught, I'm thinking kids that age interested in solar energy was quite remarkable. And, I mean, they were very excited. And this was not a school activity. This was after school. So it was optional for them to be there. But they were very excited. And they're actually assembling. They're soldering. They actually designed the encasement for the solar energy parts. And the age range of the children here, about fifth graders?
Yeah, they are from about 12.
About 12 years old?
Yeah. From 8 years to 12, 15, up to 22.
Okay.
But these ones are younger. But these ones are, I went through the Kenyan system. This one probably are 12.
About 12.
13.
And it was also interesting when I went there, there was a Maasai boy and a Maasai girl who came from south of Nairobi.
Kajiado.
And
those were older.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
So here's some of the kids that I filmed.
In the second solar class, I learned that solar is free and cheap, and it is collected from the sunlight.
The three steps of collecting solar light is collect, store, and use.
Not only boys can make solar panels, everyone can make it. And then there are two types of batteries, chargeable and rechargeable.
Panel, the switch, the battery, and the LED. When you combine them together, you'll have a solar panel. And remember, it's not a must you use batteries. You can use the sun. Thank you.
That's the Maasai.
And we have joined the solar project. For we need, if there is any support, let there be solar in Maasai.
We can help the people who don't have solar light. And thank you.
I should say, in rural Kenya, about 80% of the population does not have power in their homes. And it gets dark at 6:30. It's at the equator. It gets dark at 6:30, light at 6:30. So you can imagine the impact on the kids and their education, being going home and attempting to read books or something. It's very difficult.
I should also say I took that video, and it was just beautiful hearing those students, the information they have retained. And they talked about their entrepreneurship spirit of making those solar lights and taking it to the village. And I know Barry will continue with more video.
There's a finished product. Okay, I think it's from one perspective, you hear the level of poverty, but it's hard to internalize what that means in the context of Africa. So I thought I'd give a little example. I was working on a project with University of California, San Francisco, and it took me to Uganda a few years back. And I was working at an HIV-TB clinic, a small town west of Kampala. And I went out. There's a lot of research going on, UCSF and Massachusetts General Hospital in there big time. And MGH wanted me to go out to see a patient. Not that I'm not that type of doctor, but in any case, to go to the field to understand more about what's happening. And it was about a half-hour drive, and not much on the main road, but then we had to turn off going on a dirt track, and then we turned on the dirt track several times, and I'm curious. I asked the driver, there's no addresses, there's no street names, nothing. So how do you know how to get there? They said, well, it's the third tree over here. You turn left and continue down from there. And so this was a young woman who had HIV, a couple of young kids there. And take public transportation to go to the clinic would cost 2 weeks' wages. And this is close by. And public transportation is cheap in our...
This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is Solar Energy Project, Kenyan Youth Innovation Centers, with Barry Levine, Ph.D., Professor of Computer Services, San Francisco State University, and John B. Kahahu, St. Stephen's Memorial Academy in Limuru, Kenya. Now it's time for our audience questions. Our first question is, did the children at St. Stephen's brainstorm together on ideas to help their community? What were some things that they brainstormed? Shall we start with you, John B.?
Yes, they did. And some of them, the ideas came because of their way of life. Like I mentioned earlier, some of them live in this Camarillo village where they don't have any electricity. And so they were thinking of ways of how they can help their families and also help other people around them. And so the idea came from them because of their own experiences.
Barry?
Well, defer to Jamie. She has more experience at St. Stephen's.
Did you want to comment, though, on how things evolved?
It evolved from, I would say, from us, Barry and I, when we started the project, when we went and asked them what's important to them, what would they want like to do. And so when we mentioned solar, their eyes brightened up. And I would say this because solar is there in Kenya, but sometimes it's not. There's a social... People are not aware of it. They're not aware. So we are able to bring the awareness. And so the students immediately could give us examples from their own villages.
And there is, you do see a lot of solar in Kenya, but the expenses are too high for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's too
high. That was a question from one of our audience members. What is the cost and what has been so far the total investment that you've both made in this?
That's a great question. I do have an expense sheet here.
So we'll start with Barry and then John V, after Barry, you. How's that?
Well,
we're looking at an expense sheet for our audience on radio.
And these, of course, are in dollars rather than Kenya shillings. But there's different powered solar panels that we have here. And you can see, for instance, 12 solar panels are $5 each, and they would be $60. Now, we should mention that one of the main ideas is for the kids to develop entrepreneurial skills and interests. And so to that end, they could sell these members of the community. The solar batteries for storage of the power, you could see six volts. So we're talking about a unit price of $13 for a 6-volt. The LED lots, LED lights, $3 for 1 watt, and so on. Then there's the plastic sheeting, which is the encasement for the solar, is about $15. A lunchbox for storage, $6. So what we've done so far is I've gotten donations. I started a FundMe campaign, and I've gotten some donations there, but... really, anybody interested in participating in the project, we strongly welcome you there, as well as providing any kind of donations would be very, very helpful.
And what Barry is showing us is the expense sheet for the class for one term with 12 students and 3 months of spring, summer, and 2 months of fall. So 12 students have been involved in this project that you were looking at or doing.
We've had 2 years. So it started in 2015.
Oh.
So we've had 2 years. And so total number of students, more than 12.
We started off with like 22 students.
Total?
Yeah, in general, or 15.
Well, I saw a lot more in each class. When I was there.
Oh, those are the ones who could actually do the...
Oh, okay.
We didn't have enough equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And every student needed an equipment. But we had many more who were on standby
mm-hmm.
and who couldn't really participate as much.
So you had 22 students who actually got involved and learned all of this as they were doing it.
Correct.
Yeah, that's terrific.
And what I was saying, with my misunderstanding was that there are a lot more students that participate, but maybe those don't follow through, but 22 follow through.
Interested.
Well, just as an aside, I think that what a great advantage to have trained 22 students, because I'm sure you have seen and will see a multiplication of more students who will be learning what you've taught them. And have you seen that? Have you seen that growth in terms of their skills and abilities?
Yes, and they want to. It's just the financing that sometimes is a hindrance. They want to. St. Stephen's School has about 200 students, and so they are, you can even get up to 100 if you have the proper financing and the equipment to help the student. So the need is there. The demand is high.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was there last, there were other students at other schools that were very excited about this as well. So it's just a question of supply of resources for it.
Uh-huh. She can't read my handwriting.
What about,
what about solar cooking? When I was there, I learned about homemade cardboard and tinfoil ones that didn't work very well, and everything else was like $40 or $60 and up, which couldn't be afforded. Has the price come down? Has it gotten any more practical?
Well, I mean, I could say from personal experience, I have a good friend that builds his own solar cooking units and doesn't cost anything like that. Yeah. It's like little more than tin foil and arranging things appropriately with cardboard and so on. And that cooks dinners very well.
And I would say I'm familiar with that sort of cooking from where it's very, very warm in Kenya. It's the Cumberland. That's more closer to going towards the coast. And I know solar ovens are very popular there. And it's a business. They're sold by companies. But for St. Stephen Limuru, it gets very cold. It has an elevation of Tahoe. So and so people, even if they leave the food out during the whole day, sometimes it may not be cooked. That's what one person told me. But the need is there. Yes.
It's not cold like San Francisco, though.
No.
We have another question from the audience. How far do students travel to attend St. Stephen's, and how much would a student sell a solar light for and profit?
The last one, they travel half an hour to go to school, some an hour. It depends on the area. So it's between 1 hour and half an hour to go to school. And the other question was about the price of how much they sell them. Mm-hmm. The ones that we were able to we gave to the video you just saw of that older man, that one was like $5.
And yeah. I think that, I mean, St. Stephen's has like an orphanage where they provide the housing and so on there, right?
It's like a boarding. Some students are boarders. And so they can stay on the school compound and they don't have to commute home. But those are students who have families who can afford to pay for that. A lot of them are boarders.
Another question was how much or how many lights does an average family on because of solar now have in their families?
How much?
How many lights, for instance, in a home do families have? Do they have a lot? Do they have one or two? Do they have more than that?
You mean electricity or just
from their solar?
Well, I mean, we're just starting, and so they don't really have much right now in terms of getting the lights from the kids.
But you were successful in what we saw about having lights. So this must be something really wonderful for families to have, begin to have now and hopefully in the future.
Well, it's the kids building them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we've only had the two classes of 22 students, so there's not much that has disseminated to the community at this point.
And I should say the ones that they sold was also for a kiosk. Kiosk is like a marketplace that they have on the roadsides, and they don't have electricity. So those are the people who could at least be able to pay $5. And that money went toward making more lights, solar lamps.
Well, it sounds to me, and just as a personal response, that this will grow and there will be more and more lights. Mm-hmm. And that the children, who are fairly young when you think about it, doing this, they're doing a terrific job. And I think you both should be commended for that, of bringing those skills for the students and their families and the villages. That brings us to villages. You said that local villages should have ownership of these, and there should be a community involvement. So that builds on what the students are doing. Can you comment on that? So we're talking about the villages as a whole taking ownership and having community involvement.
Well, I could say a few words. First of all, we showed in one of the videos, some solars that were donated to some older folks there that have never had light in their place. I also should mention about the teachers. The teachers have been thoroughly committed to this, and they really enjoy teaching the kids. I'm not doing much here other than I try to get some funding. I visit the kids every year, but it's all done locally.
And I think that also the community is involved through their kids. That's how the community come in, because when the kid make those solar lights and they take them home, then the community get interested and they want that project to continue. And they keep on asking. There's one lady who got a solar lamp, and it broke, and so she's still waiting to get another lamp. So that's how the community movement comes in, through the students. And yes,
you mentioned Africans were forced to work for the settlers, and they lost their independence. Does this education that you're bringing and facilitating now help with, in fact, more independence and more understanding and better life conditions?
Yes, it is, because people now have control of their future. And at the same time, with such a project, they're able to utilize the sun. We have plenty of it in Africa, and it doesn't cost you anything. To have that sun. But what comes out of what they can make can help villages, communities, individuals. And that's a very good positive, and people are really excited to do that.
I should just mention something I think is relevant in that area that I just won't forget, which is we discussed about the GMOs.
Genetically modified,
yeah. And what I remember you mentioning was that before these companies came in, who were the companies? We don't know.
Monsanto,
whatever. Before they came in, people are very close to the earth and growing fruits, vegetables, and so on. But when Monsanto came in, instead of being able to use the seeds that are produced by the plants with their GMO products, they had to buy new seeds every year, right? So instead of providing something that's a very nice resource, they created a dependence on Monsanto for their food. And I could tell you I've worked in a number of World Bank projects and USAID projects, and I see this over and over again. And when you think these companies, aid organizations are providing services or resources for local communities out of the goodness of their hearts, you got to look carefully at what happens. I've seen the failures there.
Unfortunately, we've reached that point in our program for our last question. Mm-hmm. And that question is, what do you see for the future? For your own work and for the work that you are fostering?
I see a country, a lot of growth in the country. I see a bright future because people want to learn. They're open to new ideas. And they're also thinking about their own little communities and starting projects in a very grassroots level. And that's how we are going to bring change to Africa, to Kenya. It has to start from the people, from the grassroots. And that's happening. And education still continues to be very variable. And people are not going to stop learning. They have that thirst for learning. So the future looks good.
Yeah, absolutely. There's many universities now in Kenya, maybe too many, because a lot of them aren't really doing an effective job. As an educator, I look at these things. I spent a year at Nairobi University on the faculty there and a year at Egerton University where I started the department. But so I want to get the kids involved, and I want the university to be involved as well. I want the university students to provide outreach services like we do here. To the local community. So that's where I see things developing.
So as our last question, Jambi, for you, tell us what, in during this wonderful thing you've been doing and all of this work that you've been doing, what's the one thing that stands out most for you that touched you the most deeply? And Barry, you're going to get the same question, so...
When I go to Kenya, and I just came back a month ago, and I see the hope that people have. I see them wanting to help not only themselves but help their communities, and I think the positiveness, regardless of their lifestyle, regardless of not having enough, as we quote in the Western, a material products. They're able to deal with, to use the basics they have, and they're happy to do it. But at the same time, you have the young people who are looking for ways to make it better for them, for the older people, and also for themselves. And that's why this solar program is so important, because they can see that if they learn how to make solar lamps, they're learning a skill and making it to taking it to a different level, which is they will learn in school, and so they have they'll know how to do it, and that's what I see, and I truly enjoy that.
The two things that touched me
most deeply
are number one. Attending the class when the kids are being taught solar, to see the students there was amazing, and to hear them singing and so on, celebrating what they're doing. And the other was the teachers, to see the commitment that the teachers have and the joy that I see in their faces from in what they express in doing this.
This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is Solar Energy Project, Kenyan Youth Innovation Centers, with Barry Levine, PhD, Professor of Computer Services, San Francisco State University, and Jambi Kahahu, St. Stephen's Memorial Academy in Lemuru, Kenya. Our thanks to Barry and Jambi for a wonderful presentation tonight and all the information and hope that you bring to us. Thank you so much. So for our audience, a big hand of applause for their wonderful work. And a big hand of applause and our thanks to our terrific audience here. So let's hear from our audience and wonderful questions. and for our audience on the radio and the internet. You can find our programs at www.commonwealthclub.org for multimedia access. Watch, listen to programs, current news feeds, streaming audio, radio schedules. And you can get audio and video tapes from the club if you'd like to hear any of the programs or the program tonight and have it. We also have free weekly podcasts and archive programs. Look for our upcoming spring 2018 environmental programs. Monday, April 30th, it's our yearly spring 2018 update, the report on the Sierra Nevada's drought, rain, rivers, fire, trees, and snowpack. And we've had all of that here in California this year, as all of you know, and we still have it going on. This is our annual report, and it will be compared to our previous reports that we do each year. We have a wonderful panel, Jason Kukin from U.S. Forest Service, Patrick Capoli from the Tuolumne River Trust, Michael Carlin, who's the Deputy General Director, San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, and Bob Kingman, who's with the Sierra Nevada Conservancy. On Wednesday, May 9th, the program is Use Solar, Solar Simplified, Power Amplified for International Use. And in a way, it builds now for us on the program we had tonight, and we really thank both our speakers tonight. Our speaker that night is going to be Arnold Leitner, founder and CEO of Use Solar. Wednesday, May 23rd, Sonic Sea Documentary, Our Oceans Are a Symphony, with Daniel Heinerfield, director and producer of Sonic Sea. And then on Thursday, May 31st, San Francisco, Living, Houses, Homes, and the Environment, with George Woodward, President, Coalition for San Francisco Neighborhoods. This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. Thank you for being with us tonight at the Commonwealth Club of California and at our beautiful building at 110 Embarcadero. This meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California is adjourned with grateful thanks to our speakers tonight. Thank you so much, and thank you to the audience.